This is The State of Things. I'm Isaac Davey Aronson, in for Frank Stacio. In 1983, 50 companies owned 90% of American media. Today, just 6 companies do. There was a time when federal government did more to limit consolidation, and Michael Kopp says it should do so again. He was a member of the Federal Communications Commission from 2001 to 2011, serving briefly as chairman in 2009. He says consolidation prevents diverse viewpoints from reaching citizens and that an informed public is the only way to make democracy work. Kopp is now the senior advisor for media and democracy reform at Common Cause. He was in town as part of a UNC conference titled The FCC, Media Ownership, and the Tar Heel State. He joins us now in the studio. Michael Kopp, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on. I'm delighted to be back in North Carolina.
Well, we mentioned some startling statistics in the introduction. Why has the landscape changed so much since the 80s?
I think it's changed for two reasons. One of them has to do with the private sector, and one of them has to do with the public sector. The private sector change was that media fell under the sway of consolidation and fell in love with consolidation. So those 6 companies you mentioned grew and grew and grew, gobbling up family-owned broadcast stations, independently owned local broadcast stations, and this was the wish of the private sector, and almost all of those mergers were blessed by the public sector. So that's reason number one, that rush toward consolidation in the private sector. The other reason is what I would call being absent without leave on the part of the Federal Communications Commission and the government generally from overseeing the public interest when it came to communications, doing away with guidelines that the commission once had to ensure that there was localism, to make sure there was a diversity of viewpoint, to make sure there was competition between stations. So you put those two things together, and it was really a toxic brew for our civic dialogue. And this is where my real worry comes in, because every citizen has a right and a need to the news and information that they have to make intelligent decisions as voters and as citizens for the future of their country. And because of this consolidation and the need for the big companies to go out and prove to Wall Street that this was really a good investment, and to prove to Wall Street that they were using Wall Street's money that financed these deals, they had to show they were making all these efficiencies and economies and everything, so they cut back. And where do you think the first place they cut back was? It was in the newsroom. So we had hundreds, literally hundreds of newsrooms that were either shuttered or downsized or combined with another newsroom in the area, one less voice in the local community. We've probably got 20 or 25,000 former reporters walking the streets looking for a job rather than pounding the beat in pursuit of a story. And it's gotten to the point where I think real investigative journalism is hanging by the slenderest of threads. The ability of a company to say to a reporter, go out, take 6 months, really get into this accountability story to hold the powerful accountable, really find out what's going on. That doesn't happen very much anymore.
Can you tie that, that idea, because certainly I think all of us see that happening, but can you tie that directly to the consolidation and the ownership? In other words, how does the ownership of a particular media entity affect the fact that, many newsrooms or media entities out there just don't think that investigative journalism is a worthwhile profit-making endeavor?
Well, they're looking to lower their cost of operation, and news is expensive. Good news, the kind of news I'm talking about, is resource intensive. It takes money, and it takes reporters, and it takes time. Those aren't the things that Wall Street is looking for. Those aren't the things that look really great on the bottom line of the quarterly report. But yet that's the dominating mindset. What are we doing to please Wall Street? And we want to consolidate more. So it's a matter of record how the news has been cut. Bureaus have been closed, not just bureaus overseas, but bureaus at state houses. I wonder how many stations have, and newspapers for that matter too, are really covering the State House in Raleigh now compared to maybe 15 or 20 years ago. Last report I heard, there were 26 or 27 states in the United States that no longer had a reporter accredited to Capitol Hill. Now, you tell me how you hold the powerful accountable in a situation like that. And I have talked to senators who have said, when I came here, I'd have a press conference, there'd be 10, 15 reporters hanging on every word I've said. Now nobody's covering it.
You know, you were on the FCC under both the Bush and Obama administrations.
Yes, sir.
So let's talk about each of those in turn. What happened in terms of media consolidation during the Bush administration?
Well, I think it was laissez le bon temps rouler, as they say in New Orleans and Mardi Gras, let the good times roll. I think the theory was let the market operate. Market dynamics are the way to prosperity and the kind of government that they wanted. It was just about ideological. But just letting the market do its wonders would get broadband out to every citizen in the country, no matter where they lived. It would finance the news and information. It would finance this consolidation, which somehow would be good for media. It was hands-off government. The only thing you did was deregulate, get rid of those guidelines, get rid of the fairness doctrine, get rid of all these other provisions. So I think that was and that was really a different time in our history. You know, I think they thought of it as that's how America was built, not how America was built. America was built with public-private sector cooperation and working together to build infrastructure, whether it was canals, turnpikes, roads, bridges, railroads, telegraph, electricity, you name it. That was the American way, and it was this Bush-era aberration that really kind of sealed the doom, I think, for a lot of these for a really independent media environment.
Is there, therefore, a kind of golden age that you look back on in which there was enough media in consolidation, if you will, that that the kind of public service media and journalism that you're talking about was really getting out there?
I don't think there was ever a golden age. I think back in the 60s or 70s, newspapers were obviously much better off. They had the advertising model that worked for them. It no longer seems to work for them. I think the broadcasters understood that they were still under an obligation, that in return for the free use of a public resource, and all the airwaves in this country do belong to the American people, they don't belong to any special interests, they had an obligation to serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity, and that meant providing them with news and information. And there's this famous story of Bill Paley, who was the famous CBS mogul and entrepreneur, getting all, this is back in the, probably in the 50s, getting all of his news people together one day and saying, look, I want you folks to go get the news. I do not want you to worry about cost. I've got Jack Benny for entertainment. You raise the money. I'll worry about the money. You do the news. Now, can you imagine Les Moonves or one of these other media titans right now getting the news people together and telling them that? They get them together to give them pink slips.
On the other hand, you know, there was a lot of concern when, for instance, Rupert Murdoch took over the Wall Street Journal not long ago. Mm-hmm. And by all appearances, the Wall Street Journal, I mean, of course, it has always had its conservative editorial page, but as a news organization, it's remained quite robust.
I think that's true, but I think he also owns lots of other media properties in New York and getting kind of a hammerlock, even in a city as diverse as that. He's exercising an awful lot of power for one person. Now the rumor mill has it that Murdoch is looking to buy the Tribune Company, and that includes the Los Angeles Times. So then you got New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, lots of stations in between, lots of newspapers in between. Is that really what a vibrant civic dialogue thrives on, that kind of control by one person or one firm, that kind of homogenized programming that they produce for one station but they want everybody to run, or that kind of music and radio stations that you can get in your car on the West Coast and drive all the way to the Atlantic Ocean and you hear the same music no matter where you go, what happened to the old regional music and all that stuff? We've lost a lot because of consolidation and because of the failure of government and the public sector to do its oversight job. And now a lot of people will say, well, that fellow you're talking to, that cops guy, he sounds kind of old-fashioned. We're beyond television. We're beyond radio. This is the day of the Internet. But we don't see that model for journalism on the Internet yet, that kind of resource-intensive that can afford bureaus everywhere. And even worse, what we see right now is that same trend toward consolidation that we went through with radio, we went through with television, we went through with cable, and now we're finding out that broadband and the Internet are not immune from that. There's a wonderful book on this by Tim Wu called The Master Switch, which some of your readers might be interested in perusing.
To switch to the Obama administration, there was reason to believe, I gather, that things would change under President Obama from the Bush administration. What's happened?
Nothing.
Hmm.
I was really convinced that when the new crowd walked through the door, what was the chairman, in 2009, and I had been acting chairman for a few months, and I had teed up a lot of these things so that as soon as he got there, we could hit the ground running on some guidelines again for broadcasters doing something about the abysmal condition of female and minority ownership in this country of stations. They own almost nothing. And all the stuff was teed up, and I thought it would be a slam dunk when, whoopee, I was now in the majority if that were, there was the third vote. But that wasn't their interest in getting involved in these media questions. And right now, the FCC is considering loosening the ownership rules very much as Republican Chairman Kevin Martin and Republican Chairman Michael Powell did. Like, they would really loosen the limitations on newspaper broadcast cross-ownership. They would do away with any limitations on radio and TV cross-ownership. And I thought we'd be going in exactly the opposite direction now, but it just seems to be kind of a continuation of the same. Now, to the FCC's credit, you said what's different. You know, they're different on broadband. They're more proactive and things like that. I'm not trying to take away from that. But on these media questions, which I think are central to the vitality of our civic dialogue and the future of self-government in this country, nothing has happened, and it's by far the biggest disappointment that I had during my 10 years plus at the FCC.
You know, if one of the problems or perhaps the major problem is that the sort of what one might call the dumbed down kind of infotainment that that passes for news in a lot of places is making it harder to have an informed democracy, that stuff the companies would say back, I imagine, is popular and sells. And if you had a whole bunch of smaller companies, they'd all be chasing it as well.
I think we should experiment with diversity. I know diversity stations do a wonderful job in bringing new perspectives. I think public broadcasting does a wonderful job. We have to put a halt to some of this consolidation and go back to the family-owned. You know, I know a lot of independent broadcasters, and there's some right in this state, like my friend Jim Goodman in Raleigh, in whose breast the flame of the public interest still burns. But there are a lot of smaller stations, I think, where the family or the broadcaster would like to do a good job. But more and more are these folks captains of this mentality that I talked about before, the bottom line, and less are they captains of their own fate. So we have to find a way to encourage that diversity, more independence, and hold the big ones accountable, saying if you – this was one of the things I asked for during the famous Comcast-NBCU merger a few years ago. I was the only commissioner who ended up voting against that deal. But I said to them, if you really want to show you're serious about the news, why don't you put some real money into NBC News and really jack it up to what it was at one time instead of laying off reporters when you take over, hire reporters and do investigative journalism. They didn't even want to talk about that. They just, no, that's not going to fly. And they were willing to see my vote go out the door, but that's...
What can and should the FCC do right now, do you think?
It should put the brakes on consolidation. It should have some guidelines for the broadcast stations, try to repair old media, make them kind of news-centric. When that license application comes through the door to renew it, what are you doing on information and news and to serve the public interest? Now, everybody has to do straight news, but what are you doing to serve the public interest and have some criteria for that? So we need to do that. We need to make sure that the new media of the Internet is open, network neutrality, as it is so inelegantly called. And we need at the FCC to jumpstart a national discussion on what is the future of the media and broadband and the Internet generally, if eventually radio and TV and all of this stuff and the town square of democracy itself is going to move online. And that hasn't happened yet, but if it's going to. At that point, broadband becomes hugely invested with the public interest. That becomes your central, as I say, town square of the civic dialogue. So we have to have an intelligent discussion and then figure out what we need to do. Nobody is in favor of regulating the Internet, But we always have to have a news and information infrastructure that serves the needs of the people and make sure we have incentives sufficient to make sure that that happens. And right now, we need that both in traditional media and in new media. It's not one against the other. We're living with a system that's part traditional media and part new media. We're going to be for a long time. 90% of the news that we get, even the stuff that you see and read on the internet, still comes from traditional news. It comes from the broadcast newsroom, comes from the newspaper newsroom. It's just that there's so much less of it than there used to be. And I think there's so much less of it that we have really endangered the ability of the people to have the depth and breadth of the news that they need to make intelligent decisions. You use the term dumbed down dialogue, and I think it's difficult to deny that that has taken place.
We've just got a moment left, but I wonder if what you would say to folks who might be listening to this, and especially with the NBCU Comcast merger, it seems like massive companies merging at the very top. How does this affect my day-to-day life? Why should I worry about this?
Well, it affects the price you pay for your cable programming. It affects the price you pay for your broadband, if you're lucky enough to have broadband. Prices keep rising. It affects the kind of programming you get, the extent of the news versus opinion, fact versus fiction. It prevents you really from getting the kind of grip on what's going on in your community, in your country, and in the world in which you live so that you can really help us get out of the problems we're in. The United States of America is in serious trouble right now. There's no little card that says eventually, you know, you're going to get out of the hole you're in or America's going to come back with all the vibrancy that and strength that it had. We have to make some really intelligent decisions if that's going to happen in a system of self-government. That means the people make those fundamental decisions.
Michael Copps, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Michael Copps is a former FCC commissioner and chairman. He's now the senior advisor for media and democracy reform at Common Cause. That's the State of Things for today. Thanks for listening. The State of Things is directed by Alex Granados and produced by Sean Wen, Nicole Campbell, and Dave DeWitt. Christina Blyde is our intern. Robin Copley is the technical director. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Isaac Davey Aronson.